手ばすればや。オムナモバガヴァテヴァスデヴァヤ。オムナモバガヴァテヴァスデヴァヤ。Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 36th chapter, text number, sorry, 4th canto, chapter 30, text 36.
Yatra Narayana Sakshad Bhagavan Yasinam Gati Samstuyate Satkatashu Mukta Sangai Puna Puna Yatra Narayana Sakshad Bhagavan Yasinam Gati Samstuyate Satkatashu Mukta Sangai Puna Puna Yatra Narayana Sakshad Bhagavan Yasinam Gati Samstuyate Satkatashu Mukta Sangai Puna Puna
Ladies.
Yatra,
where?
Narayana, Lord Narayan. Sakshat,
directly.
Bhagavan, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yasinam,
of persons in the renounced order of life.
Gati,
the ultimate goal.
Samstuyate,
is worshipped.
Satkatashu,
by discussing the transcendental vibration.
Mukta Sangai,
by those who are liberated from material contamination.
Puna Puna,
again and again. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Lord Narayan is present among devotees who are engaged in hearing and chanting the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Narayan is the ultimate goal of sannyasis, those in the renounced order of life. And Narayan is worshipped through this Sankirtan movement by those who are liberated from material contamination. Indeed, they recite the holy name again and again. Purport. The Mayavadi sannyasis are missing the real presence of Narayan. This is because they falsely claim to be Narayan himself. According to customary etiquette of Mayavadi sannyasis, they address one another as Narayan. To say that everyone is a temple of Narayan is correct, but to accept another human being as Narayan is a great offense. The conception of derision Narayan and poor Narayan, an attempt to identify the poor with Narayan, is also a great offense. Even to identify Narayan with demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva is an offense. Yastu Narayanam Devam, Brahma Rudradi Daivatai, Samatvainaiva Viksheta, Sapasandi Bhaved Dhruvam. One who considers Lord Narayan on a level with great demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva is immediately listed among non-believers. That's the translation of that verse. The fact is that by performing Sankirtan Yajna, one can immediately please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then Narayan himself descends and immediately is present. In this age of Kali, Narayan is immediately present in the form of Lord Chaitanya. Concerning Lord Chaitanya, Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 5th chapter, 32nd verse states, Krishna Varnam Tusa Krishnam Sangopangastra Parshadam Yajnai Sankirtana Prayar Yajanti Sumedasa. In the age of Kali, intelligent persons perform congregational chanting to worship the incarnation of Godhead, who constantly sings the name of Krishna. Although his complexion is not blackish, he is Krishna himself. He is accompanied by his associates, servants, weapons, and confidential companions. End quote. After all, human life is meant for pleasing Narayan, and this can easily be done by performing Sankirtan Yajna. Wherever there is congregational chanting of the holy names of the Lord, Gaur Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his incarnation as Lord Chaitanya immediately appears and is worshipped by Sankirtan Yajna. In this verse, it is said that Narayan is Nyasinam Gati, the ultimate goal of the sannyasis. The goal of those who have renounced the material world is the attainment of Narayan. If Vaishnava sannyasi therefore dedicates his life to serving Narayan, he does not falsely claim to be Narayan. Instead of becoming Nirvara, envious of other living entities. Say it again. Let me read that again. Instead of becoming Nirvara, non-envious of other living entities, one who tries to become Narayan becomes envious of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the attempt to become Narayan constitutes the greatest offense. Actually, when one chants or discusses the transcendental activities of the Lord, he immediately becomes non-envious. In this material world, everyone is envious of everyone else, but by vibrating or discussing the holy name of the Lord, one becomes non-envious and devoid of material hankering. Because of our envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we have become envious of all other living entities. When we are no longer envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there will be peace, unity, and fraternity in human society. Without Narayan or Sankirtan Yajna, there cannot be peace in this material world. Om Aginatam Anandasya Janandina Shalakaya Chakshuruna Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So this verse, when we hear this verse, we're reminded of that verse that Sri Sachi quoted yesterday about how, I think it's Krishna speaking, he says, I'm not in Vaikuntha, I'm not in the hearts of the yogis, but I'm where my devotees are chanting my glories. And also, there's another verse in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, Mach chita mad gita prana buddhayantas parashparam katayantas chamam nacham tushanti cham ramanti cha. That the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me, their lives are surrendered unto me, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss enlightening one another and conversing about me. And even this understanding is even there to a certain extent in Christianity. I can't remember the exact verse, but I had it quoted to me when I met Christians on Sankirtan, something to the effect that, it's in the New Testament, Jesus Christ said, when two or three, when a few people are gathered together in my name, I'm there. Something to that effect. So they even have that same understanding. It's there. So Krishna's present. Where devotees are trying to glorify his name and engage in the Sankirtan movement. And it's pointed out here that this is something that's done by liberated souls. You know, that's experienced. That's directly experienced by people who are liberated from material contamination. But the point also is there that even if one is not liberated from material contamination, if one engages in this Sankirtan, one will become liberated eventually from material contamination by the process of Sankirtan, and then one will be able to experience what's being described here, which is that, you know, the pleasure of chanting, glorifying the Lord again and again. This point was made in a song by Lochan Das Thakur. He goes, Bajo Bajo Bai, Chaitanya Nitai, Sudhrida Vishvasha Kordi, Vishaya Chariya, Sema Se Rajya, Mukhe Bulo Hari Hari. He points out that it's a song about glorifying Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. He glorifies them as the supreme incarnations, Paramakarana, Pahundrijana, Nitai, Gaura Chandra, and how their incarnation is the essence of all incarnations, and they're supremely merciful because they're giving people the process which is kevala anandakanda, simply joyful, the process of self-realization. And then he goes on in that next verse to point out that the qualification is that one has to chant the holy name of the Lord with the mouth, mukhe bolo hari hari, but vishaya chariya seira se majiya. One has to give up the motivation for sense gratification. Then one will be able to experience the nectar of the chanting. But then, and again, he goes on to say, deka ore bai tribu vanena emana dalaya data. The mercy of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, is so great that even the animals in the jungles became awakened to Krishna consciousness in their presence. You know, when Lord Chaitanya was going through the forest of Jarikanda, even the tigers and the elephants and the deer and everything became Krishna conscious. So he's making that point. And even he goes as far as to say that even a stone will melt. You know, that the merciful qualities of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are so great that even the stone will melt. But then he says in the last stanza of his song, he says, Samsara majide rohila podia se pare nahilo ash apanakaroma bunjaya samana kohe lochana das, that he laments, he says, but I don't know, something must be wrong with me because, you know, I somehow or another, he's redressing his mind, that somehow or another, his mind, you cannot become attracted to this chanting. He says, I can only conclude that I'm being punished by Yamaraj. Like that. You know, it's his humility, of course, but because he was attracted. But anyway, he's representing the conditioned souls, as sometimes the acharyas do. And he's presenting like that, you know, if anybody's not attracted to the Sankirtan movement, they can understand where they're being punished by Yamaraj. So unfortunately, there are a lot of people in that category. You know, there are a lot of people. We should, you know, think about this a little bit. There's a lot of people in this category of who must be being punished by Yamaraj, because we could see it's a little bit difficult to spread Krishna consciousness. It's a little bit difficult to spread the Sankirtan movement. You know, despite the fact that it's an incarnation of Lord Chaitanya himself, and it's meant for specifically for the purpose of delivering the fallen conditioned souls. And so, you know, when you think about that, it's, as I said, it's a little bit. Why should that be so? Because, like, for instance, in the first canto, it's not just Lord Chaitanya that wants to deliver the fallen conditioned souls. I mean, that's also the desire of Lord Krishna. In the first canto, second chapter, I think it's in the 17th verse, Srinvatam Svagatak Krishna, and the purport to that, Prabhupada makes a comment, something to the effect, he says, that Krishna wants us to go back to Godhead more than we can imagine. Some of the devotees remember that? You know, Prabhupada says, the living entity definitely doesn't even really want to go back to Godhead at all, and Krishna wants us to go back more than we can even imagine. So, you know, if that's there, then, you know, if that's the fact, that Krishna wants the fallen conditioned souls back to Godhead more than we can even imagine, well, why isn't it happening? Why is it that it's not happening? I mean, also Krishna says himself in the Bhagavad Gita, Nasyami atma bhavishto, jnana dipena bhashvata, that he says, I destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So, you know, it's not something that Krishna is not capable of. You know, Krishna can, just like that, he can just, you know, destroy the ignorance of any living entity. You know, and, Tesham evanukampartam, aham ajnana jamtama. He says, out of compassion upon them, I can destroy the shining lamp with the darkness born of ignorance with the shining lamp of knowledge. So, what's the problem? What's going on here? Well, why is it that, you know, everybody's, so many conditioned souls are trapped here in the material world? Well, Krishna gives a hint to the answer to that question in the previous verse. In the verse just before that verse, he says, Tesham satadayuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam didami buddhiyogam tam yenam amupyantite. He says, to those who are constantly devoted and worshipping with love, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. So in other words, you know, those are the people that Krishna does that for. Those are the living entities that Krishna, you know, nasyami atmabhavishto, destroys with the shining lamp of knowledge, the darkness born of ignorance, to those who are constantly devoted and worship him with love. See? So, you know, generally, that's the general principle, that Krishna does want the living entity to, you know, to come back to Godhead, to come back to pure devotional service, but they have to have some little bit qualification, some slight qualification, and that qualification is that they should be constantly engaged in devotional service and worshiping Krishna with love. You know, as we know, Krishna, where Krishna gives us free will, he doesn't want slaves who are resentfully serving him against their, you know, desire, or he doesn't want robots. You know, he wants loving servants. So that's basically, that's how Krishna's working. You know, the jiva has to have some slight qualification. In other words, he wants it. He wants that relationship with Krishna. But then, of course, then again, we get this, in a purport, in the fourth canto, chapter 29, Prabhupada makes this interesting comment. This one I'll have to read, it's just a couple sentences. And we recently heard this purport, because we're in this section of the Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada says in this section of the purport, he says, a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always thinking of how fallen conditioned souls can be delivered. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, influenced by the merciful devotee's attempt to deliver fallen souls, enlightens the people in general from within by his causeless mercy. So now that figures into the picture. You see? So basically what's being said here is despite the fact that the living entity doesn't have the qualification, right? If a devotee of Krishna, somebody who's already a devotee of Krishna, you know, who's preaching on the behalf of Krishna within this material world, desires strongly enough, you know, has an intense desire and is making a very sincere, genuine effort to deliver the fallen souls, then despite the fact that these living entities really don't have any qualification at all, Krishna, reciprocating with that devotee, as it says here, will enlighten the people in general from within by his causeless mercy. So a devotee can figure into the picture. In other words, a devotee can intercede, so to speak, and sort of oblige Krishna. I don't know if that's the correct word, but inspire Krishna to make a concession. And Srila Prabhupada is a great example of this. You know, that Prabhupada is an example of, he's writing about himself here. I mean, not maybe intentionally, but he's describing himself because that's exactly how this Krishna, to my understanding, that's exactly how this Krishna conscious movement is developed. That Prabhupada was that devotee. See? It says here, the Supreme Person of God, influenced by the merciful devotee's attempt to deliver the fallen souls. So, you know, Lord Krishna was influenced by Prabhupada's attempt to deliver us. And the result was he enlightened the people in general from within by his causeless mercy. And the proof of that is that Prabhupada confirmed that on one occasion when we really had no qualification. A devotee asked him, Prabhupada, I've mentioned this in classes before, so I'll just very, very briefly refer to it. A devotee asked Prabhupada, it says in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Yesham Phantakatha, and he quoted that verse about only those who have acted piously in this life and in previous lives whose sinful activities are completely eradicated can engage in my devotional service with firm determination. So the devotee went on to ask Prabhupada, did that mean that we were engaged in pious activities in our previous lives, and as a result of that, we've come into devotional service? And Prabhupada said, no, I have created your pious activities. See? So it's basically Prabhupada's mercy, you know, that we're here, you see, because we had no qualification. We didn't have pious activities backing us. Not necessarily. We didn't have Prabhupada. At least that's the way Prabhupada answered that question. And another thing is that we could see that, backing up a little bit. So the way I see it is there's three things involved in spreading this Krishna consciousness movement. There's three factors kind of things. There's the living entity, the jiva, right? There's the pure devotee or the devotees, and then there's Krishna. As far as the jivas go, they have to have some little slight qualification, because we could see even during when Prabhupada was here, you know, it's not like everybody became a devotee. certainly Prabhupada was, you know, representing Krishna. Certainly Prabhupada was a pure devotee and he was empowered to spread Krishna consciousness. But despite that, it wasn't like everybody became a devotee. You know, some people became devotees and some people came, you know, and many people became devotees at some level or another. And certainly a lot of people got an opportunity to engage a little bit in devotional service. But some people didn't become even engage in devotional service, and some people did nothing. You know, they just totally missed the boat, so to speak. They just missed the opportunity. See, so the living entity has to, you know, have figures into the picture there. It's not like everybody's going to become Krishna conscious necessarily. But Krishna's within the heart, and he can see who's the least disqualified, and maybe those are the people that, you know, get inspired to sort of reciprocate with the devotee's attempts to engage them in devotional service. So the living entity is there. He figures into the picture. Then the devotee, as you know, us, in other words, we, for our part, what we have to do is we have to try to cultivate an intense desire to deliver the fallen souls. That's where we come into the picture. See? It's not that we can expect, you know, we shouldn't be thinking that, well, you know, it's Krishna's mercy or these people have to be sincere. No, we figure into the picture too. We figure into the picture too. And that's where we figure into the picture. And that our duty, our responsibility is to try to cultivate an intense desire to deliver the fallen souls. Right? And if we do that, then Krishna will reciprocate with us, just like he reciprocated with Srila Prabhupada. I mean, that's my understanding of how it will work, you know. And for confirmation on that point, once Brahmananda asked Prabhupada some sort of a question. I don't know what the question was because it was, you know, Prabhupada answered him in a letter. But he was asking something about Krishna's mercy or Krishna's kindness. The answer Prabhupada gave was regarding Krishna's being kind upon us. He said, should be on the principle that Arjuna followed. And so then, I can't remember the next part of the letter, but on other occasions Prabhupada said, well, obviously we know the principle Arjuna followed is that he fought. You know, on different occasions Prabhupada, in giving lectures, say, Krishna never told Arjuna, sit down on this chariot and go to sleep and I'll take care of everything. Or on other occasions Prabhupada said, just sit down and smoke marijuana, I'll take, no. Prabhupada never said that. Prabhupada, you know, Krishna instructed Arjuna to fight. So then Prabhupada, in that letter, he goes on. So ordinarily we have to try our best, to our best capacity to achieve something. And then Prabhupada said, and by Krishna's grace, all of a sudden we shall see, everything will be there. This sort of help from Krishna is transcendental happiness. And that's how it works. See, Prabhupada's giving us insight into how the whole thing works. We have to try. The devotees have to try. Krishna wants to see what is our desire. What are we bringing to the table, so to speak? You see? And then when he sees that, he reciprocates. He reciprocates. But, you know, for our part, we have to try. We have to try to cultivate that intense desire and act upon that. And then Krishna will reciprocate. And the same thing will happen as what happened when Prabhupada was here. Hopefully, that the Krishna consciousness movement will spread. Ultimately, it's by Krishna, you know, but that seems to be how it works, how the whole thing goes. And then the third factor, of course, is Krishna. And ultimately, it's up to Krishna, because nobody can become Krishna conscious without Krishna's mercy. Just like it says in that verse, Nasyami Atma Bhavishto. Unless Krishna, you know, destroys with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance, nobody becomes Krishna conscious. It doesn't matter what we do or what they do. You know, ultimately, it's up to Krishna. Krishna has to. Krishna's in control of that. He's Dhyampati. He's the Lord of Intelligence. He's got to turn the switch, or at least move the dimmer, and enlighten the living entity. Otherwise, you just stay in the darkness. Ultimately, Krishna's totally in control of that. But you know, as I said, we get insight or we get indication of what principles Krishna's operating according to, and if we, you know. Take up the program, so to speak. If we get with the program, then, you know, Krishna will keep his, you know, keep his end of the bargain and reciprocate and, you know, respond in a particular way. So, so anyway, that's my understanding of how the Krishna consciousness movement can spread. You know, we have to, and as I said, for our part, we have to cultivate that intense desire. We have to, you know, I think it's a common saying, action speaks louder than words. So, you know, when you hear the word desire, you think of a mental activity. It's something you do in your mind, desire. But, you know, we have to do that, but we have to act on that desire too. We have to, you know, perform activities which indicate that, or will help us, you know, develop that desire more, such as we have to go out and preach. You know, we actually have to go out and preach and Actually, the way I see it is everybody in this movement, everybody's here in this room right now, should be, you know, thinking and planning, making plans to do one of two things, which is either one, directly go out and preach, or two, think of some practical, real way in which you can facilitate, you know, the people who are prepared to go out and directly meet the, you know, the conditioned souls. One of two things. That's what this is, because that's this movement. This is a movement, you know, Prabhupada, you know, set up this everything, you know, the deity worship, everything's supposed to support this preaching effort, you know, our outreaching to the conditioned souls to try to help them become, attract them to engage in devotional service. So everybody, all of us here should be thinking like that, really. We should be thinking, okay, how am I going to get out there and preach, or how can I facilitate those people, or facilitate the preaching, one or the other. And then we're properly situated if we're thinking like that. So, that's the class, basically. Okay? So, I just want to make one point, and I'll take some, got enough time here, so I'll just make this one point, and then I'll take some questions. Hopefully, somebody will have something to say. Yesterday, at the end of Sri Sachi's class, I asked that question about Vyasadeva, you know, and how did he know? And he answered correctly. He's a Shakyavesha avatar, he's Tri Kalagya, and Archita further elaborated upon it by saying that, you know, it's not so far out. He has, you know, he's clairvoyant. He could understand, just like, and he gave the example of how, I don't know if you're using me as the example, or your wife as an example. Sometimes she's, I think it was your wife as you were using as an example. Sometimes she'd see somebody on Sankirtan with an Indian body, and she'd go, "Hey, Sanjay," you know, and she'd be right. You know, that would be the person's name. And I was thinking, that's pretty far out, actually, and that does happen. You know, Krishna just does, you know, just pop things in your head. The other day I was just right around the corner here, and I went to this place, Polo Tacos or whatever it is, because I was trying to see, it's a Mexican sort of a food place, and I was thinking, oh, maybe I could get a picture taken there of me giving him a book. It turns out the guy was a Christian, he wasn't into it. But in the course of talking with him, I just, you know, we're talking, I said, so anyway, we're about 45, right? And he goes, he said, "You're 45, right?" And he goes, "Yeah, I don't know." But, you know, it's a big stretch to be able to guess somebody's age once in a while, or somebody's name once in a while, because I'm sure she probably was wrong sometimes, and I was too, to be able to, you know, accurately describe what's going on, past, present, and future, any place in the universe. And that's what Vyasadeva was capable of doing, you know. Of course, he was capable of doing that. I mean, Narada Muni, his spiritual master, in that fifth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, says that, you know, when he was instructing him to do the write the Srimad Bhagavatam, he said, "Yeah, and you can do this because, you know, you can delineate the pastimes of the Lord for the enlightenment of the conditioned souls." You know, he had that, he was given that ability by Krishna. So, this is something that's, you know, it's, we take it for granted. We just go, "Oh yeah, of course, Vyasadeva, you know, Shaktivesha Avatar." That's pretty far out if you stop and think about it. If somebody, you know, knows what's going on everywhere, now, in the past, and for the future, you know, it's a pretty big, for the average Joe, it require a pretty big leap of faith to kind of, you know, wrap onto that one. And but that's what's required to be a devotee. Unless you believe that, unless we have faith in that point, you can't even go forward, because you're not going to have faith with what's written in the Vedic literatures, in any of Prabhupada's books, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, or anything like that. But the point I wanted to make this morning was, and I have faith in that, as I'm sure all of you do, is that it's made more difficult for people to believe in that because of the Kali Yuga and the educational system in the Kali Yuga. Judha Karma wrote this really incredible book, Human Devolution, and this, I was remembering, there's one example in it that he gives of these two brothers, Alexei and Adolphe Didier, and they were living in England back around 150 years ago, and they were clairvoyants. They had some clairvoyant ability. Anyway, specifically what happened was, they had this guy who would put him into a trance, you know, like hypnotize him, and then when they were put into this trance, somebody would ask them, you know, "Okay, describe my house," you know, they'd never been there, obviously, they'd never met the person before, and they'd describe the person's house in detail, you know, where the different paintings on the wall, anything. I mean, it was like they were there. It was like they could just go there, and they were seeing what was there, and they could describe it. And then on top of that, this actually happened in a meeting. And this meeting was attended by the Lord something or other, who was England's ambassador to France, and some other respectable people. And some of these same types of meetings were attended by very prominent scientists of the time. Some of them were even Nobel Prize winners, like Sir William Crookes and Sir Alfred Russel Wallace. And, you know, people of that stature were actually attending these types of, I don't know what you call them, seances and medium, you know, meetings with these mediums, and directly witnessing these types of things. Anyway, so another thing they did was the people who were trying to test their ability, clairvoyant abilities, would have a book in their hand, and they'd say, okay, tell me what's on page 87. Tell me what's on page 61 of this book, the second paragraph. The guy would be holding the book, and it would be closed. And this fellow, you know, Alex or Adolphe, would just sit there, and they go, and they'd start reading it off. They could tell them. And this was witnessed by, you know, as I said, scientists and respectable people. So, you know, point being that, yeah, people have these powers. Clairvoyance is there, you know. Mental telepathy is there. All sorts of different, you know, things like that are there. But people don't get to hear about it, you know, unfortunately. People don't get to hear about it. And this is really Kali Yuga. It's really an unfortunate age we're living in, because it's hard to become Krishna conscious. It's ordinarily, even in the best of times, you know, it's difficult for people to become Krishna conscious, but it's made more difficult by the fact that, you know, people are really being kept in the dark. You know, it's like Judhakarma talks about this thing, the knowledge filter, where, you know, things are kept from people. You know, the demons are in control, and they have a particular type of worldview out there, which is totally bogus and, you know, nonsense. But when evidence comes up, you know, when evidence is presented that, you know, it threatens that worldview or contradicts it, it doesn't get a fair audience. You know, it gets repressed, it gets ridiculed, criticized, and pretty much nobody ever hears about it. You know, and there's so many different categories like that. So once again, getting back to the point of the class, which is that we really have to get out there and preach. People are in a, you know, it's really on the conditioned souls are really in a, you know, in between a hard spot. Was it? How's that?
Rock
and a hard spot. They're in a bad position, you know. And we really have to get out there and, you know, try to somehow or another give them the mercy of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, because they got the human birth, but unless the devotees, unless we get out there and try to help them, try to engage them in devotional service, it's going to slip right by. Yeah, and tell you what, it's amazing. Time really does fly by. Human life is not very long. I was remembering the other day, I was here in 1988. 1988, I was at that time, I was living in Australia. My parents were living in New York, and they were thinking about retiring and out here to California, because my father had a brother out here. And so they were hoping that also, you know, I'd come out back here, which I eventually did. Anyway, so I flew out with my son to just check it out, you know. And I was just remembering as I was driving yesterday, I was saying, wow, that was 20 years ago. Because I was remembering how I was standing on the corner waiting for Vaisheshika to pick me up to take me to the airport to go on Sankirtan, and just some different things, because it was 20 years ago, exactly to this month. I was going, is that for real? I can't believe it. Was that 20 years ago? Because I could remember, like, you know, what I was thinking, how I was feeling, everything. Not just where I was standing, but the whole thing, what clothes I was wearing. I mean, I was just driving along going like, whoa, I can't believe it. That's 20 years. Because it was. Time goes fast. I mean, we don't have forever to do this job. In other words, we should get out there. And for ourselves, too, we should be thinking like that. We think we have forever to become Krishna conscious. We don't. You know, we don't know how long we have. I mean, we've heard this 100,000 times. Well, I know. I'll say it one more time. We really don't know. And now, lately, we've been getting all sorts of, like, poignant reminders on that fact. I'll stop there, actually, because I want to take a few questions or comments, if there are any. Anybody have any question or comment about any of the Swastika thing?
Thank you, Brigopati. This is a good warm-up for the marathon. So, I agree with you. I think that we should have a one-mindedness, especially coming up to the marathon. You know, the Gita Yajna on the 7th, and then, of course, on the 14th, we'll have our World Enlightenment Day. And I think that it's important to say that Srila Prabhupada was result-oriented and minded, but it wasn't a result for sense gratification. In other words, when Prabhupada was present on the planet, he was very anxious to hear what the Sankirtan scores were. He wanted to know how much Lakshmi, he wanted to know how many books were distributed, he wanted to know who it was that was doing it. In those days when there was a Sankirtan newsletter, Srila Prabhupada read it, because I remember I was in Atlanta, and Prabhupada actually, well, at that time he read the newsletter, and he knew that it was Charadeshna who won that week's results. You know, he distributed so many books and collected so much Lakshmi. He actually got a letter from Prabhupada thanking him, you know, for his surrenderedness, his service in distributing his books. So I don't think we should be in any way intimidated or embarrassed in saying that, yes, we should do a lot. You know, Prabhupada said, let's double it now. What does that mean? You know, when Prabhupada would say, let's double it, it means double. Okay, you did 100,000, do 200,000.
What did we do last year?
What did we do last year?
Let's see if we could double it.
We should double it, yes. That would be glorious if we doubled it. Last year was a above medium year for us. It wasn't a great year, but this year we're doing less. But the point being is that, you know, in order to accomplish this, we do need a one-mindedness. We all should be thinking how we can help, you know, the preaching. No matter who we are or where we are, we should see how we can surrender and do more to facilitate the results of book distribution. And so if we're just a devotee in a temple, we're not a book distributor, then we should think what we can do extra on a daily basis during the marathon in order to get someone else to go out on book distribution. If someone wants to actually go out, then another devotee should see what they can do to help facilitate that opportunity.
Yeah.
Oh. You know, we should be thinking like that, especially at this particular time, in this particular period, where we're trying to get close to a marathon and we're trying to do a ton of books.
Yeah, just interrupt for a second, just to get real specific. Actually, we have four devotees who want to go out full-time. They're now engaged otherwise, but there are four men who are willing to go out full-time Sankirtan. If we can find replacements for them to do their service, then we can get them out. I won't mention the names, but so that's there. So if anybody is interested in kind of taking up some service, and you know, they work in the restaurant, in the kitchen mostly, then they can come forward. Or if you know somebody who can be, you know, steady, reliable, and like that, mention that person to Savas, and maybe that person, you know, could be spoken to and to help out like that.
I think that if we have that one-mindedness, then the result will come, as you said, if we just go through it, you know, if we just perform the yajna. We were told in the old days that even if you were a book distributor and you went out and you only did a couple of books, but the devotee next to you did like, you know, 50 books, you know, you facilitated, you helped that particular person do that amount. Mm-hmm. You know, your sacrifice was that you went out there and you were part of the team. You did what you had to do, although the result may not have been as big for you personally, but because we were all thinking on the same page, so to speak, the result came. So if the whole temple really gets on the same page, that, you know, okay, I can't go out, but what can I do? If we sincerely think, well, what can I do? Can I give a couple of extra hours, as you said, in the restaurant? Can I give a few extra hours in the deity department? Can I give a few extra hours in the gift shop so somebody can do something else? You know, what can I do and give up or sacrifice something that I'm, you know, doing for the cause to come on that level where we're all together and trying to facilitate the book distribution? And then the result will come. It'll be miraculous. We'll think, oh my God, how did that happen? And the way it happens is that everybody's trying to do the best they can in order to help the preaching, the book distribution, especially during this period of time. And all of a sudden, the numbers will just come.
Thank you. That's a great comment. Anybody else? Yeah, Mother Kushakti.
Regarding the question that you asked yesterday, since you brought it up, there's a story that Lord Shiva at one time was reciting Srimad Bhagavatam to Parvati, and she was falling asleep, like we do sometimes in class. But he was reciting, and there was a parrot that was in the tree listening. And the parrot knew that Parvati was falling asleep, so in her voice he kept prompting so that Lord Shiva would keep on speaking the Bhagavatam. And the parrot would say, and Lord Shiva was prompted to speak and continue speaking the Bhagavatam. And at one point, Lord Shiva realized that Parvati was asleep and that it was the parrot that was using her own voice to prompt his discussion. And so he became very angry and he chased the parrot, everywhere, all over, and chased him into a forest where at that time Vyasadeva was reciting Bhagavatam to his wife. And his wife was sitting with her mouth open, like awestruck that at these pastimes, and the parrot took refuge by flying into her mouth. And so Sukha, the parrot, Sukadeva, I'm not sure if she became pregnant at that time or became impregnated by the transcendental sound vibration in the form of the parrot. So you were asking how he heard the Bhagavatam. Well, he was impregnated by the sound vibration.
Wow. That's pretty far, huh? Thank you. Anybody else?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, one last little thing. If anybody, because, you know, Suvas mentioned about World Enlightenment Day coming up, and that's a day when, you know, we all will be trying to go out or possibly. So if anybody's just in anxiety about spots, I kind of know a lot of spots that could be. A lot of times devotees just wind up going to the Santa Monica Promenade or Venice Beach, but I think I can help you with some spots if you want something that's a bit sweeter than that. So if anybody, you know, if that's a problem for anybody, please come and talk to me and I can give you some ideas. Okay, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.